Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 62 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Announcements this week. It was announced that Outlander is going to be airing in Poland starting November 3rd, which is amazing. I think it's random that of all the countries who keep getting it and all the countries that don't keep getting it. Or maybe it's not random.
No, I think Summer means the country that doesn't keep getting it.
Yeah.
We are here and we understand and we support you, UK. We want you to have it.
I mean,
really badly.
I'm super happy for Poland.
Of course.
Don't get me wrong.
Every
new country, I just get a little sadder. I get happier and sadder all at the same time. Ron Moore was one of the top 50 showrunners by the Hollywood Reporter for 2014. Which I think is amazing and totally well-deserved. I mean, what he's done with this series has been nothing short of amazing. Sadly, this week... Sadly, this week, it was announced that Jennifer McDaniel of Nevada won the Watch and Win sweepstakes with Stars. It was not, in fact, me. Or Ginger. Or any of the people that I know personally.
Anyone that we know anywhere.
So, but congratulations to Jennifer McDaniel of Nevada. We look forward to seeing what they have you do in season two.
Yes. To me, and people have their own opinions, of course, but I don't know, honestly, what's more exciting. The fact that someone will get to join the cast for a scene or an episode or whatever they end up doing, just period, or the fact that it's part of Dragonfly and Amber, which is my favorite book. So, and the whole universe knows that. So, anyway, it's just... That, to me, makes me extra happy for this person because this would be the one that if I had had such an opportunity, it would be this season.
So, a giant happy birthday to Claire Elizabeth Beecham Randall Fraser. Mm-hmm. Fraser, excuse me. October 20th, our Claire turned, what was it, 90-something?
I think 96.
Like 96? You look good, girl. You look good. There's been a lot of little memes out about her.
Yeah.
For
and
her
Stars
birthday.
Put one out.
That's... Stars did put one out,
yeah.
So.
It was very sweet. Like a little video. It was very sweet.
It was sweet. Happy birthday. And that is the week of announcements for this week. So, without further ado, let us move on to our Chapter 3 read-along for Dragonfly and Amber.
Before we begin, Summer, would you like to introduce our friend of the show who will be joining us for our read-along discussions of chapters 3 and 4?
Nope. Oh, really? You want me to? Okay. This is one of my dear, dear friends, ex-roommate, multiple times. I think we've lived together at least twice.
Mm. It worked out and then didn't work a few times.
Yeah. If you count summers.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of my bosom friends, her name is...
I'm good with Abby.
Her at sign, y'all, is at Abolicious. And she's very abolicious, I will say.
Aw, thank you.
You're so welcome. Okay.
That sounded so fake.
You're so welcome.
Stop throwing me under the bus here.
I want to know, we always ask our guests this, how you discovered the book series of Outlander.
She blames Summer.
They usually do.
Totally Summer's fault. Summer came out to visit me in
Georgia. I thought you were going to say Summer came out to me.
That's funny on so many levels that we're not even going to go
okay,
into.
Okay, enough.
So Summer came out to visit me in Georgia, and she was like, handed me this card, this business card, and said, so my sister and I have this little podcast that we do. And I was like, oh, that's cute.
Wait, hold on a second. You didn't tell her about Outlander?
No,
no.
We were
10 years ago?
Ginger, no. I was out visiting. Ginger, we haven't been doing a podcast for 10 years.
I don't know
exactly.
If she
I thought you would have told
Outlander.
Her about, not the podcast, I thought you would have told her about the book years ago.
No.
Okay, so I'll tell.
Actually, I think we talked about it at one point, but she was not interested in picking up a book series.
Oh, there's something.
Like there, were, I know that there was a discussion, because I know that I was reading it several times. In your presence, but
I don't remember this at all. I think you're lying. Okay, so she came out to visit me, yes, as we've lived together for numerous occasions, yes, and long periods of time over the past almost 12 years of our life. I don't remember ever being introduced to Outlander until this year. However, I'm sure it happened, and I'm sure I had some wonderful excuse, like, I'm super busy, yo.
You don't usually give me a book. Super busy. No, she's usually super busy, yo.
Yes, true. Super busy, yo.
Let's be real.
I'm from Atlanta. It's the streets.
No, you're from the A.
She's from the streets.
Isn't that what they call it now? The A?
We're too lazy to say the ATL now. That's what I've heard. It's just the A. Forget Albuquerque or anything else that starts with an A. We are the A.
Well, it was Hotlanta, and then everyone hates that.
It makes me feel like an A.
I know. It was Hotlanta, but everyone hated that. Yeah. And so then it was the ATL, and then I'm pretty sure it's now the A.
Which I'm not really sure why Hotlanta is such a hated thing now.
They just hate it.
It is hot there. It is. And it's Atlanta.
But they hate it.
We could call it the gridlock, since that's what we're well known for now. Regardless. Okay. So, Summer came out to visit me last February.
Yes.
And she hands me a business card and says, so my sister and I have this, we're doing a podcast. And I was like, oh, that's cute.
That's cute. That's
cute. You know, and she starts playing an episode, you know, and I'm listening, thinking, gosh, y'all speak so slow on the podcast. Which I should tell you, I don't know if you know this yet, Ginger. I listen to this podcast at 1.5 speed. Because that's how fast you normally talk.
You definitely speak more slowly on the podcast than you do in real life.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that out there.
That's good. It means I'm, whatever this means, it means I'm quote unquote on. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm doing it for a purpose. I'm not on anything. I'm just, she's giving me this really funny look right now.
No, but in a normal conversation, everyone else feels like they are.
That's true. Or on something.
On something.
Okay, that's a whole other story. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. She gave you a card. She went. She handed me this. She bammed you.
Yes. And then, you know, we listened to one of the podcasts in the car, and I was like, okay, so it's about a buck. That's cool and everything. And then I got home and looked it up, and I was like, they have like 16,000 listeners. I was like, what in the world?
She's like, what is she doing?
She starts telling me about these books, and I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds cool, you know, and it's going to be a series. And then she left, and
No. Before what? I left, I personally downloaded first book on her phone. It was the audiobook on her phone so that she could listen to it, because she drives in a lot of traffic. That's something people from the A know, that there's nothing but traffic. So she spends a lot of time in her car. So actually reading like paper books is not practical for Miss Abby. So
at least the police tell me so.
Right. So I downloaded the Audible book for her, and I made sure she had it before I left, mm-hmm, so that she had no excuses.
So I think I probably started Outlander maybe a month later, sometime at the end of March, I think.
She admits this now.
Was when I first started listening to it. Well, because I don't remember what I was doing. I think I was reading another book or something like that.
I'm sure it was important.
And I was, everything in my life is important, Summer. So I was reading something else. So I started it at the end of March, and I'm now on Echo and the Bone. So I'm on book seven. I'm about halfway through book seven.
So are you addicted yet?
Well, yeah.
Look, when we were when we were first planning this visit, it was around the fact that she did not have stars. And no one she knew had stars. And I told her, come out and visit sometime after the end of the beginning of the hiatus, and we will marathon the whole thing at my house. And then you can watch it with me. Now, I did not realize that she was so into the books that she made her mother subscribe to stars.
So it's totally legit.
And got her mother interested. She hasn't read the books, but she does have the audiobooks, right?
She does.
She's gardening.
She's on my Audible account. Yeah. So she listens to she's listened to the first book while she's gardening. And my dad listens and gets really, really worked up about it.
Uh-oh.
Which is funny because he can't follow a conversation at all anymore. But he'll follow the book, and he watches the TV shows and gets really into them.
Which I love.
Yeah.
It's like my favorite thing ever. So I just like to imagine when I watch the episode, Gail and Jim just sitting on the couch and watching, mm-hmm, watching Outlander and being outraged and having all the emotions that we do.
Yes. They're very vocal, too. I quit taking to the movies years ago.
No. And the thing that
other people can hear them.
That's the thing that you also need to understand is that while Abby does not have an accent,
both of her parents have very deep Southern accents.
Well, yeah, they were raised.
Yes. So I would like to one day sit with them and watch the episode so I could hear them talk in their very deep Southern accents and be outraged with Jamie's treatment.
It's very sweet. How could they do that?
But I will say that Abby does have an accent, but only when she's talking to her cats. Which is like my favorite thing ever. She has no accent, and then all of a sudden she turns to her cat and she goes, "Now, Chloe? Now, girl? Why would you do that?" And I'm like, "Why do you have an accent now?"
I don't know. It's just my family.
So before we actually start with the detailed read-along discussion for Chapter 3, kind of a general comment was sent in by Teresa Kay. She wrote, "Mothers and Daughters," which is the chapter title, "is aptly named, though I think it deserves a modifier of awkward. Claire's relationship with her daughter, Brianna, seems distant to me." And that's definitely up for discussion.
You know, I have a feeling that it may seem a little distant, but it is because Claire is hiding this giant secret from
her. And all we're seeing is how they are right now at this time.
Right. And
we're not seeing the last 20
years. And I feel like she probably was never like this with her when Frank was alive. But with Frank's passing and her trying to get up the courage to tell her daughter the truth, I feel that it's changing the way she's very nervous being in Scotland. She doesn't feel comfortable. And she's just, like I said, she's just holding on to this horrible secret that she's terrified to tell her.
It's very hard to get close to somebody when you are not being completely honest with them.
Yeah. And so Claire's belief that her daughter has not yet noticed Claire's slip-ups of time-related comments seems delusional to me. Now, Diana, and that's again still from Teresa Kay's comment, Diana makes it obvious, at least I think obvious, to the reader when these slip-ups happen. We just see them and go, whoa, right? But what we don't see, and it doesn't mean that they don't have a reaction, but what we don't see is at least the outward reaction of Roger and or Brianna when one of these things happens.
Well, and also we're getting Claire's perspective.
Exactly.
Like we get the, and then she was nervous because she stuck her foot in her mouth.
Right.
But to Bree, I mean, her mother she's a surgeon, so she's super smart. She's full of interesting information. I mean, like you, Ginger, you come up with some of the craziest facts. Random facts that we just take in stride and say because she's brainy, you know. But it very well could be that you came from another time period or planet or, you know, who knows?
Maybe so.
And in your mind, you think you're slipping up. But in our mind, we go, she's bookie.
Are you going to take my bets?
No.
Is there a horse race I can put some money on, bookie?
Teresa Kay goes on to say, "If my mom repeatedly threw out historical facts as if they were personal reflections, I'd like to think I would have thought it strange." And I actually kind of see what Teresa's saying.
The only reason that I would say I wouldn't find it strange is that Claire has probably been doing that her entire life. Her entire life. And if somebody
letting things slip?
Oh, yeah. She's probably been throwing out things as, like, historical things as fact, like, that come as a personal thing her whole life. She probably accidentally does it all the time. I mean,
yeah,
it's something that she's probably, but the point is that it's something that is probably commonplace. So she wouldn't be that surprised by it at this point.
Well, I don't know if it's who knows if it was all that common with her when Frank was alive and Brianna was growing up. But I will stand corrected in one case. I think it was chapter 2. Well, whichever it was, if it wasn't 2, it was 1. We've only done 2. I have a 50-50 chance of being right here, y'all. Okay, so in one of the chapters we've already done the read-along for, when Claire mentions how mulling leaves were a good source of TP.
That was chapter 2.
Chapter 2.
Yeah.
And they both kind of stop and look at her. So that is an example of how she was giving a time travel-related tip that they just thought was, you know, what? Not that they, of course their mind did not go to time travel, but their mind was like
random.
Well, random, and they didn't consider her dad was the historian, not Claire. So that is one time where a comment was made and they did notice. So I do stand corrected. But yeah, it's very, very interesting. So we're still in Inverness at the beginning of chapter 3. Claire and Brianna are walking the high street. And that sounds really bad.
Walking on High Street?
It was 1968.
And Claire gives us a litany of some of the different Highland kitsch that can be procured in the touristy areas.
Now, I was never in Inverness. I was in Edinburgh. and
they still have Highland Kitsch.
I know.
There.
No, they totally do. But that's I'm just saying that's my only experience. Yeah. So I don't know if it is worse, better, or the same as in Edinburgh, because I've only been to Edinburgh. But it's everywhere. And and I totally identified with that when she was talking about, oh, those stag antlers are super expensive, and she's like, I'll just get her some tartan, and she's like, that's gonna be pretty expensive too. And it is, like, we even walked into like to a kilt shop, and it was like so ridiculously expensive, like so much more expensive than any skirt you've ever seen in any store ever, like hundreds and hundreds of dollars, if not thousands, depending upon how much you want and in what state it is when you buy it. But yeah, no, it's crazy expensive.
Teresa W. comments, it's nice to see Claire and Brianna just enjoying themselves and seeing Claire's Showbury, Scotland. And I thought, I think so, because we don't get a lot of, I mean, up until now, we really have not gotten a lot of Claire and Brianna, except for the moments they were on the doorstep. I mean, before they rang and Robert.
Why do you keep calling him Robert?
I don't know. It's the second time.
No, for serious.
I called him Robert last episode.
She did.
You did. Okay,
Robert,
so apparently, and so
yeah, the marbles. I don't even want to go there.
I spent a good portion listening to that, trying to figure out what you were doing with marbles in your bathtub.
I don't even know.
She laughs while she edits. I want to point that out.
Oh, I do.
She totally
I think
does. She'll call me in, and she's like, come listen to this.
Oh my goodness. So, I do agree, though. We don't get a lot of. Well, okay. In Outlander, there was no Brianna, and I don't want to, we can't speak further than what we've already talked about, but suffice to say, this is, I think, the longest scene or set of scenes that we have thus far with Brianna and Claire.
To be honest, and to be fair, this is the first section that was not Roger heavy, to be honest, because even the Claire sections previous were in Roger's presence. So this is the first time that they've really been on their own in the novel, and you get a feel of, we're tourists. Doing touristy things, which I think most people who have actually been to Scotland can totally identify with.
A listener named Ellen remarks on Brianna's attraction to the staghorns. And I will say, I did not, I can't speak for you ladies, but I did not pick up on this or think about this way.
I didn't either.
Let's talk about jeans again, Ellen says. Brianna looks at the staghorns in one of the shops on Victoria Road. And why? ? She doesn't know who her father is, yet she's attracted to all things Fraser. Je suis prêt stag, and Claire does not even notice.
It's the only thing she doesn't notice, because every other time anything's mentioned, she pales and freaks out.
That's true. That's true. Very true. So from all of her descriptions, the one I liked the best was a wildly inaccurate depiction of the Loch Ness monster singing, Auld Lang Syne. And this is Ginger again, not another listener. How does she know it's inaccurate? Because she saw it in Outlander Chapter 19,
now,
The Water Horse.
Now, for the series watchers alone, they won't know this. Because we all know that they did not include this in the series. It was one of the things that did get edited out. They mentioned the history of the Water Horse.
Right.
And that they were telling that tale. But they did not include, they will not, I should say, they will not be including the visitation of the Water Horse that is actually in the book.
Right.
So because we know that, they probably will not include this when they do start series 2.
Which did you ladies like best?
Which what?
From all of her descriptions.
Are you talking about which is our favorite depiction of, like, Scotland kitsch?
Yes.
Scottish kitsch?
Yes.
I'm kind of, maybe my dirty mind is at play here, but I want to know what these sporans with an anatomically correct Scotchman hanging from looks like. Because what I thought about was, there is a car in my neighborhood that's on, like, super big tires, and
have
it's bright
the balls
purple
hanging from
and
them.
It's got
it's
the,
called truck nuts,
gold testicles.
Oh,
and
truck nuts,
I get stuck behind this car all the time, and I'm like, of all of the cars in Atlanta, how do you keep approaching my life? Because
no, I remember
it's disturbing.
I've had the same experience in Atlanta, but mine were not gold. They were like flesh toned, which was almost worse.
No.
It was disgusting. It was not okay.
That's the only ones I've seen.
They were flesh toned.
That's disgusting.
I've also seen blue ones. Which are just kind of depressing, actually.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, you're putting it out there for the world to see, Betty.
Right?
Sorry, man.
So what did you think of Claire's adage, anything over 100 pounds is very likely real?
Do you travel or shop with your own adage when you're overseas, like touristy shopping?
Are you talking about the staghorns?
About the... Well, she's talking about anything in general. She's saying... Because she mentioned the price was very expensive, and she's saying, look, anything above 100 pounds is very likely real.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Do you travel with your own adage? Do you go buy something like that? Like, if something's really expensive, it has to be better.
Well, I'm going to put it out there. I'm really bad at souvenirs. I generally don't have a lot of time for them, and I almost feel like, you know what? I don't want to spend my money...
Yeah. Take pictures or buy postcards.
Right, because, yeah. I mean, I don't want to take up space in my bag that was full when I got there, and I didn't get rid of anything, and I don't really have any room to put anything else in there unless I buy a new bag to fill it full of kitsch. So I generally take pictures and just have memory moments.
When I go to Europe, I try to always leave room for the allowance of 2 bottles of wine that I can bring back. Oh, that
you can bring back. Yep, absolutely.
But also, I'm obsessed with European and old historic cemeteries.
Ooh.
And there's really not a lot souvenir-wise I can bring home. Just, you know, pictures. Like, hey, here's a crumbled off piece of a tombstone from the
She's like, I always travel. I always travel with a chisel and a hammer. No. Just so I can take a little piece of Jim Morrison's tombstone.
But I will say that I've noticed, you know, that things that are more authentic tend to be more expensive in the touristy shops.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get to spend time, you know, like they spend enough time in Inverness that they get to know the people there, you know. And there's a place in France that I spend some time, and some people out there that I know very well. So I've gone out there, and the things that they've given me and the things that I've gotten in, like, their little villages are more authentic than anything I'll get in a touristy shop, but they're normal priced.
Mm-hmm.
They're not super expensive because that's just what they have, you know?
So Brianna and the rain, I wrote, ha ha ha, I've lived in Scotland. Yep, pretty much it's rainy. And you two have been there as well. Can you confirm this? Does it rain a lot?
Yeah, I was there for literally 8 days. And of the 8 days, I'm fairly sure it rained 7 of them. and that was...
Didn't you guys go together?
No.
Oh, sorry, different trips.
No.
Oh, so you haven't been.
I haven't been to Scotland.
I'm so sorry. Okay, sorry.
But I was there literally, it was probably close to the end of May, beginning of June. Like, this is the time, I mean, I know here in America we have, like, what, April showers bring May flowers, so it's supposed to rain a lot in April, and maybe in May, but it was unexpected that we would have left the United States and gone back. We did pack for cooler, because we expected cooler. But
weather.
I still had to buy a coat when I was out there because I was not warm enough in what I packed for myself. And then I had to, the coat that I did buy was a rain slicker because it was raining the whole time we were there, which was lovely. I love rain. We don't get enough of it here in California. We're in a drought. Anyway, but then we came home and I was dressed because I was used to dressing for Scotland. And we were dressed for Scotland. We got on the plane. And then we got out of the plane in Atlanta, and it was, like, 100 degrees. So as we walked out of the airport, we were stripping our clothes off and, like, almost down to nothing by the time we were out on the sidewalk waiting for our friend to come pick us up. It was the most ridiculous sight. If somebody had seen it, it would have been hilarious.
I think I saw it. Didn't I pick you up?
It's possible.
I probably did. It's like... Tank tops and jeans with a heap of coats and scarves.
So, like, and we were carrying everything we'd taken off because we didn't have anywhere to put it, but it was so funny.
So I don't think I used a Mac like Brianna did, or like they did.
Macintosh?
I think I just used an umbrella, but I did, more than once, I had an umbrella, a very, quite large umbrella, be blown inside out because, oh, great, it was just... I was on the coast where it just was super windy. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I just let it rain on my head and moved on with my life. Because it was like, we didn't bring umbrellas. I didn't want to buy an umbrella because I didn't want to bring an umbrella home.
Yeah.
I didn't want to buy new shoes. I didn't want to have to pack new shoes home. So I literally just let it rain on me. And it was fine. I mean, at the time, my hair was pretty straight. So it just kind of stayed where it was. And I put it in a ponytail and called it a day. But, yeah. I think if I was going to be there and living there, I would definitely invest in some rain shoes and a rain slicker like, you know, maybe a hat or something or a dedicated umbrella for the occasion. But given the fact that I was only there for like 8 days, it was not worth my time.
Connie says, as to Diana's rich vocabulary for descriptions, I was struck by how many ways in Chapter 3 she conveyed the idea that the Scottish weather was wet. There was rain,
Brianna comments about her Mac, which was invented by a Scot, and many other mentions of water. And I can say, just for the sake of time, I could not include every single instance that I'm pretty sure Connie caught up or caught all of them. It is, I mean, go back and look at it. She must have had between 15 and 18 references of something of wet or water in some way. It was crazy. It was really neat. So good eye, Connie. As they're talking about the Mac and its development, Claire has what even she calls a slip. She says, "Most Scots I've known were relatively impervious to rain." And I wrote, "Tell us more, Claire, really, tell us more." A listener named Samantha shares, "Claire slipped up again by mentioning Scots that she had known. I wonder if she made the slips at home or if being in Scotland is making her slip up." And that's another good point. She also wonders about the history. Has she done this or is it something that Claire normally does? But that's the first time I thought of it. Well, I guess thought about it literally why it's coming out now. To me, if she only did it here in these few days here thus far, it's because of what she knows she's going to be telling Brianna. It's what's on her brain. Well, and it's when they're talking about. We've already talked about how she's staying away. The last 20 years, she's purposely stayed away from things related to Scotland and Scottish history. So it wouldn't surprise me if she didn't have as many slips in the last 20 years as she has had in the last few days. Okay. So Claire is berating herself for continuing to keep her secret from Brianna. Why not just tell her, she asks herself. The reason she hasn't told her yet is timing, she says. She wants her to see Scotland first, the countryside, Culloden, and she wants to be able to tell her the whole story, including the way it ended. And she's waiting for Roger to do his work before she can do that. As they're walking down the street to find a place to safely cross, they spot Roger's car. But then Claire pulls Brianna into a cafe, saying she's still hungry after all. Claire needs some time to think. She sees the parking lot for ScotRail passengers only across the way and assumes that he, Roger, is likely taking a train to Edinburgh or to London. Quote, "He was taking this research project seriously, dear lad," Diana writes. Brianna has apparently taken a lot of notice of Roger as well. She asks Claire if they should get a thank you gift for his work. Brianna says she thinks that the project is a lot of work and asks why her mother asked him and didn't use some firm to help her search, like Scott Search. Claire says that it was a special project, special to her, Brianna's father, and he would have wanted Roger to do it. Brianna then asks her mom if she misses her father. Her answer is, "Yes, we didn't always get on, you know that, but yes, we respected each other, that counts for a lot. And we liked each other in spite of everything. Yes, I do miss him." I know we don't know much yet about Frank and Claire's relationship after Jamie, but this gives us the best look at it that we have thus far. It's interesting that she doesn't tell Brianna she loved or loves him. And she doesn't placate her. She doesn't lie to her. She doesn't give her an easy answer or a thing that she would want to hear necessarily. She's very honest. But it makes me wonder if Brianna ever felt awkward or odd about her parents not getting along, or at least not openly expressing love, if in truth that's what they did not do. She obviously felt very loved by her mother and father, but it seems it was his thing, her family, that sort of thing.
What I did notice is that she did state, "You know, we didn't always get on." Mm-hmm. So it made it clear with that statement that there was a noticeable, like, rift between the two of them. Rift between the two of them.
I'm sure they did holidays, etc., together as a family. But since Claire was in medical school and then busy at the hospital, it was very much a team effort. A team effort made up of two completely individual entities. While we understand a little more than the first-time reader will at this point, we are still, after 8 books, awaiting more of Diana's frankness, ha ha ha, about Frank. I cannot wait for the book What Frank Knew.
Right?
Totally. I just feel really bad for Brianna, the child, who, while she had two very loving, dedicated parents, they loved her, and not necessarily each other. But I'm happy that she had the upbringing she did. She did feel love and give love in return.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with that statement. Just the end part about, while they may not have loved each other, there was love between them.
At one point?
Yes, but I don't think, and I think when she came back, she still loved him. She just loved someone else more. And she was having a hard time reconciling the two things with each other. But I don't think she didn't. I think that on at least one level, she still loved Frank. She just wasn't in love with Frank. You know what I mean?
What I'm saying is, in Claire's own words, she does not say that she loved him. Not that she never loved him, ever, but that in Brianna's lifetime, she never mentions the word love. And it makes me think that while they were obviously very, very affectionate and loving to Brianna, independently and maybe even together, because that was nothing hard for them to ever agree on.
No.
Loving their child.
She was the bridge between them. She was
absolutely.
She was the one thing that kept them together.
I mean, they obviously will reveal more in later chapters about the relationship between Claire and Frank.
Yes.
But I will agree that I think that this one paragraph, we didn't always get on, you know that. But yes, we respected each other. That counts for a lot. And we liked each other in spite of everything. Yes, I do miss him. I just feel like that's very telling, you know. And any child who grows up with parents who fight a mm-hmm. lot and who have problems, you're not oblivious to it, you know. And any child will go through the ringer of, is it because of me? Is it my fault? Mm-hmm. Would it be better if they could get, if they could be separated? And are they not separated because of me? I'm sure, like, that has, that helps a little bit with some of the tension between Brianna and her mom. I just think it's interesting that Brianna even asks her, mm-hmm. do you miss Daddy? You know, I feel like that's very telling. Because mm-hmm. if it's an
for her
obvious,
to ask that.
Fairly recent
yeah.
death within the last couple of years, yeah. I mm-hmm. think. You know, you wouldn't. If it was a happy home, you wouldn't ask, do you miss him?
Exactly.
Well, no, not really. You know, I mean, of course she does, you know. But it's an honest question and an honest moment from a daughter to a mother. And I think that tells us a lot. So I think it's wonderful that she got an honest answer.
Krista sort of feels like I do. She says about that paragraph or about that discussion, she says, it sounds rather bleak, actually. And that's exactly how I came away from that paragraph or discussion feeling. Not bleak for Brianna in that she didn't have a great upbringing. I think she had a very loving upbringing because mm-hmm. We know both of her parents loved her beyond anything. So
no,
that's not up for discussion.
But it was.
But Claire's reaction or Claire's words to me, I do. I, just like Krista, exactly. I come away from that saying, how bleak is that? You couldn't have said, I mean, not that you don't want her to, you don't want her to lie, but you couldn't have said, you know, I loved him in my own way. You know, even something like that. It's a little.
No, but it's very telling because people who've grown up in an unbroken family, I don't know if that's what you say, because you always talk about broken
intact.
Homes. Intact. And intact. People who've been raised in an intact environment where their parents are still together, they have a different experience than someone who's grown up in a broken home. Where they're a product of divorced parents. They have a whole different set of feelings about what's appropriate. They come to it very differently. Like, there's a lot of people, I mean, from my personal experience, a lot of times someone who's come from an intact family will fight for their marriage and will try to keep it together because that's what they know. But someone who comes from a broken home will say, you know what? My dad actually married somebody else after my mom, and he's way happier now. So he's like, maybe this isn't too bad to separate from my wife. And it's not worth fighting for. So you come to it from a different place. So for, you know, it's a different headspace. It's just a different kind of experience. So for me, I came from an intact home. And from that experience, I personally feel the marriage is worth fighting for, and that's something you do because that's what I experienced. But a lot of people who come from broken homes don't feel that way, and that's my bottom line. They don't see that, hey, you know what? This is important. We stick it out. We fight for it.
I wouldn't say that they don't have that feeling because they may, because of what they experienced, want to, it's a very overused term, but want to, quote, break the cycle. They may want to fight even harder. Because they know what it was like to come from a broken home or a non-intact home. But I will say that one thing that you and I cannot say is and I think you would agree, because I know you were giving an opinion there, but you're absolutely right. We cannot get into that headspace. It's not our experience.
Well, I was going to say, and on the flip side of that, there are people who came from very intact homes. There was a period of time that my parents fought so much that I prayed for divorce, you know, that I was hoping for them. You know, you're not happy, and mm-hmm. so I'm not happy. And so mm-hmm. our whole family is unhappy right now because you refuse to allow yourself to separate. And now I'm obviously glad that they didn't, you mm-hmm. know, but yeah, I think it's just, it's different with every situation. Mm-hmm. But I think the point is here in the book, we get this first major glimpse that maybe Claire and Frank didn't go back to ground zero mm-hmm. with their hunky-dory, beautiful, romantic relationship.
There was no third honeymoon in Scotland.
No, right? No third honeymoon. But to be honest, I would have been a little ticked off at Claire if she had gone back and been like, oh, I'm back in love with Frank now. Because Jamie was such a polarizing influence in her life that had that experience meant nothing to her and she'd gone back to Frank like nothing happened and been totally unaffected, it would have like really hurt my feelings. Personally,
I don't think there was a chance for it to not have affected her at all. But you're just saying if it had gone back to the way it was.
Right.
That's all you're saying.
I'm just saying that if Brianna had grown up in a loving home where the parents got along and there were no issues between them, it might have been a little disconcerting for me knowing how she had felt about Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, I'm saying.
We already know that Claire came back pregnant.
Yes.
By not Frank. So.
Well, she's a redhead, so.
I think that's a pretty strong indicator there.
And we don't know. We can't say.
Things weren't going to go back to the way they were.
One would hope. And especially with the first book where he stated unequivocally that he did not think he could care for another person's child, which is why he mm-hmm. was not open to adoption.
And this is also interesting. Oh, I'm going to... That. Timing is interesting. Last week's live podcast by the people with Story Wonk, the Scott and the Sassenach podcast, Alistair Stevens, or at Paper Bullets on Twitter, started his Outlander seminar. And they're doing Outlander. They're not doing Dragonfly and Amber.
Yet. Give them time.
Oh, no. They'll get to it hopefully next year. But they are... Or maybe next summer. But yeah, that would be great. But he did say he would be, he's reading and he would join us on our read-along. He would be listening. But anyway, hi, Alistair, if you're there. So in their first episode of his Outlander seminar, one of the things he talks about, he brings up this thing about adoption. And he mentioned about how Frank said he could not be a father to an adopted child.
Yes.
Right? And he basically said he couldn't imagine actually any child. He couldn't imagine sharing Claire with anyone or anything. And then he made his one exception, which was if she were to get pregnant and he could watch the child grow within her, he would be able to see it as an extension of her. And he thinks in that case, he would be able to share her. Have a child.
Oh, that's not how I took it at all.
But it's just what he said.
I know.
It's just his interpretation. But my point is that
he made it very clear. The way that I read it when I read it was that he was saying, I don't think I could love a child that was not my own. That's very clear. He stated that very unequivocally as far as I took it.
Because it was about adoption. Yeah. They were talking about that. And so whether you agree with that interpretation or not, I find it fascinating. As far as adoption goes, in the 1968, or I guess 1948 world where Brianna was born, there was no adoption needed. She was born to that couple, and he was considered her natural father.
Because they were technically still married.
Of course they were. So that's, adoption is not, you know, really the case here at all. Although it is in a kind of in a spiritual sense, or in a moral sense, or whatever. It wasn't in a legal sense, because he was the natural father, according to the law. But he could have rejected Claire, obviously. He could have rejected her, right? So he did not. He accepted her. So, at least in his heart, he did adopt this child that he knew was not his. So it's very interesting that, yeah, he is so adamantly against adoption, and one of perhaps the greatest love of his life ended up being his adopted child. So I think that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I love that. I mean, we haven't even gotten to that yet in the book about how he just literally falls in love with Brianna pretty much upon sight.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's so true, though, because I have, like, my my friends have babies, and it's like you just walk in and you see this new baby, and it's not even your baby, and you're just like, I love this child. I love this baby. It's not even mine, and I just want to make sure this child has everything it needs. And just to have that connection with a child that's not even your own, I can totally see it happening. I mean, obviously, having a child of my own, I know that feeling firsthand as it actually being my child. It's very easy to love someone else's child, and I can't imagine if you lived with a child, regardless of it being your own or not, day in, day out, how you could not love that child because it's part of your life.
Well, the other side of that, too, though, is that she looks nothing like him, acts nothing like him.
And doesn't look like Claire either.
And doesn't look like Claire either, and he knows that she is someone else's child, that his wife, whatever her story was unfaithful and had a child from another man and brought that child home to be fathered by him. So day in and day out, I mean, and that I think shows a lot to Frank's character, because there are people in this world who cannot look at a child because they remind them too much of pain in their own life.
Yeah.
And they can't handle it, you know? So when it comes down to it, I think it's indicative the way she talks about, the way Brianna talks about her dad. You know, she calls him daddy. What 20-something-year-old calls their father daddy still?
What 30-something calls their father daddy?
What 19-year-old calls their... I mean, right. What, like, I don't know.
Unless you already have, like, a very close relationship with him.
No,
which...
they call them daddy when they want something. Let's be honest. Let's put that out there.
That is not untrue.
They're like, oh, daddy, but I really need $100 to go to that concert.
Well, yeah, and I don't think she's... I just think, like, it shows that she... And she's constantly referring to him, and she talks to Roger about him a lot, and she talks to Claire. She brings him up a lot. Like, obviously, she looks up to him. She references him. She thought, you know, he was smart, and there's an obvious, very close, loving relationship there between her and her father... You know, that is different. Maybe not, I'm not going to say it wasn't as much for her mother, but it's different from her relationship with her mom.
This little cafe scene just always makes me a little bit sad. It's not very on the happy side of things. So Claire pops across the street to mail a letter, ostensibly to the hospital in Boston. Brianna agrees to go to the kilt maker's shop and meet her there after she's done. Connie recommends a site for sources of kilts, and we'll share that in our blog post. It's albanach.org. And I love these little things that pop up, that creep in from Diana's scientific background. While I'm pretty sure she must research things related to the surgeries Claire performs in later books, she does have her own significant amount of scientific knowledge, working knowledge, that she can use at will. When speaking of the rain, she writes, "In most cities, the usual response of taxicabs to rain is to disappear, as though they were soluble." And this made me laugh and reminded me immediately of the rules of solubility we had to learn in chemistry, and I will link to those as well. She finally gets a cab. She describes its interior as warm, tobacco-scented. Do you two have a feeling like that or something when you step into a cab?
Okay, I have many experiences with cabs. My first experience with cabs was in New York City, and they are small, they are cramped, and they're generally smelly because, you know, they're used very often by any number of people. Now, what I will say is when I was in London, and we only took cabs in London, not in Scotland because we had a car, but when we were in London, we did take cabs, and they are very roomy in London, and like they are unlike cabs that you've ever been in New York. They are roomy, they smell like nothing, and they don't have the ridiculous, like, little audio blurb that they make you listen to in New York. Because there's, what I remember when I lived in New York in the 90s was that it was always Eartha Kitt. Almost every cab I got into was Eartha Kitt saying something about putting your seatbelt on with some sort of comment about Catwoman, and it ended with her going, "Row." That's what I remember from cabs.
That's so weird.
No, it's so weird. But that's what I remember from cabs, is that they're small, they're a little bit stinky, there's always some really random person driving, and a weird picture in the back. And not a little leg room. But I do remember, because the cabs that I took in London had room for you to sit and face each other. It was weird. It was like, there was a whole row with their back to the driver, and then a row... facing that. And you could literally sit and have legroom and talk to each other. And you rarely had enough people with you to sit in both sides. But so you always had lots of legroom. But I just remember that cabs were just a whole different experience in the UK than they were in New York.
I need to put that on my bucket list. Ride in a cab in the UK. Because my experience with cabs is wholly from Morocco.
Oh, gosh.
Where they're all 30-year-old Mercedes. And
oh, wow.
They all, I guess, run off of diesel or, like, I don't know, oil of the earth.
That's appropriate. Most diesels from, like, 30 years ago, most Mercedes from 30 years ago are diesels.
Yeah. And they all smell like they've been broken down in a car shop for the last week or so, which I know isn't the truth because they don't take them to car shops. Because we broke down on the side of the road in Morocco one time and were there for about 2.5 hours with like one bag of trail mix and a Sprite between the six of us. Because, yes, there were six of us plus the cabbie all riding in the car together in each other's laps. I mean, it was... Hmm. And that's how you rolled. Pun intended.
Or not rolled if you were broken down. Yeah.
That's how you sat on the side of the road in the dust, in the desert.
Connie was very curious as to the description as well. She writes, "Of course, these days, if we got into a taxi that smelled of tobacco, we'd probably complain." So where is Claire off to? Hmm. The manse to interview Roger's housekeeper, the wonderful Fiona. She feels bad she hasn't told Brianna what's what yet, and that she had to sneak off to talk to Fiona, and that she hadn't told Roger the whole truth yet either. She will, but the time, again, isn't right. Claire's envelope was actually from Scott Search, whom she'd hired. She'd done a, quote, thorough, discreet job on Roger Wakefield. Diana writes, "I knew who his parents and grandparents had been back some 7 or 8 generations. What I didn't know was what he might be made of. Time would tell me that." Now, when you read this the first or second time, or if you were reading it fast, maybe it was the third time you caught it, who knows?
Or like today.
Did you remember, or what did you think about reading when you read or found out that Claire had basically done a background search on Roger?
I loved it.
And to me, you know, it's like Frank coming out in Claire.
No, but you know what? It made so much more sense because I can't imagine, regardless of the age of your kid, sending your kid off and being okay with them going off with basically what amounts to a virtual stranger. Because if I took, I mean, my daughter's 6, but if I took my...
sending her off to any stranger.
I won't even let her go to birthday parties alone. But if she went off to, if she was 19, 18, 20, whatever, I can't imagine going to a foreign country with her to take her to, you know, visit all of these sites and be whatever and just be like, "Hey, you're somebody I kind of knew when you were like 5 years old. I feel comfortable with you taking my daughter off to go see whatever, and I'm going to hang out in my hotel because I'm uncomfortable." I can't imagine having that be something that I'd be okay with. Now, granted, this is the, you know, 2014, and that was like the 1960s, but I still can't imagine that being something that was okay with the... knowing that she did the background check, it makes a lot more sense that she felt more comfortable to do that with because... kind of knows where he's been and what he's been up to.
Do we know how long they've been in Inverness on this trip?
I got the feeling they hadn't been in the city long before they sought him out.
I think she did this background check on him.
Oh, years ago, I'm sure.
Like, very premeditated before they got there. Yeah, because also, remember, like, there wasn't internet back then, so she would have had to call them or mail them. They would have had to do all of the research.
Right.
And then mail it back. So this was premeditated stalking, in a way. Like, she premeditated that she was going to do this crazy genealogy on Roger. To make sure that... But I don't even know. I wouldn't say that it's so much to do with the fact that he's going to be, like, hanging out alone with her daughter.
No. But she knew the Reverend had passed. That had happened a couple of years prior. So she knew that was not going to be her option anymore. She knew that the next person down the line was going to be his essential son, not his, you know, biological son. But she knew it was going to be Roger. And I think that knowing she was going to ask Roger to do this task for her, the most important thing for her to know was what he was made of and what he's been up to and basically
right.
to go into it with her eyes open as much as possible as she could in the 60s.
Well, and I wonder, too, if this will be a more interesting conversation in a later chapter when we find out a little bit more about his genealogy.
But for the record, when my daughter hits 20 or 21 and she starts,
she's not going to Scotland.
She's not going to Scotland, but I'm surely going to be background checking all of her potential beaus before I decide that it's okay for her to go alone with them.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
Okay, so Claire pulls up to the manse, meets Fiona, and then says she wants to speak with her about her grandmother, and fade to black. That's all we see. There is things are referred to later on, but that was pretty fishy right there. So flash forward to Brianna and Claire at their own guest house. Claire is presumably not feeling well. Uh-huh. Brianna says, "Are you sure you're all right, Mama? I could call Roger and ask him to go tomorrow if you'd like me to stay with you." So was Claire sick or not? Was she... exactly.
We all know she wasn't.
Was she trying to allow Brianna and Roger to grow closer without her there? Because, of course, she was hungry. As her stomach almost gives her away. As soon as Brianna left, she pulls out, I love this, a large Hershey bar with almonds she'd hidden the night before. We read the direct answer to my question just a few paragraphs later. Quote, "No power on earth would make me set foot again on that deadly moor." So not only do we know her opinion and the answer of why she's not going, but also
the again statement.
The again. So she's already been there. Was there a tour of Frank and Claire at Culloden?
Well, there definitely was in the
book
series, but she does state that they went there on their honeymoon together.
Okay, so she has been there.
I remember reading too that when they did go there together, and he explained to her what the clan stones were, and
but in reality, I love that Diana stated probably pretty recently in the last couple of months about Culloden, and she mentioned that every time she's been there, it's always been rainy and cold. Which is kind of, almost everyone who's ever talked about going to Culloden has experienced that same thing. So it makes me wonder if that area is literally always under a fog of cold and rain, just from like the atmosphere of what happened there. Everyone talks about when they've been there that it's been like almost oppressive. They feel like the energy that's been left there. I did not make it to Culloden. I would like to go at some point.
It's good in that I think it's an important place to go if you can make it. It's definitely very, very, yeah, it's definitely, it's a trip, you know, as far as being just, if you know nothing about it, it's very solemn, but if you know about it, if you read the books and you know even just even a little bit about it, it's, you know, kind of takes your breath away. It's very sad. It's very, you know, respectful. You're quiet when you're walking around.
It's solemn, I hear.
Very solemn, yeah. So Teresa W. writes, "I completely see why Diana had her skip going to Culloden again. Too traumatic." Now, when we say too traumatic, that is not, again, I don't know if this is correct English or not, that is not false. What happened at Culloden, even if you and I read a history book, is tragic, right? Just what happened was tragic, whether we were there or not. We can't say too much more because we haven't gotten there,
but we are very clear in the fact that she knew people who fought
yes,
there.
Yes.
And right. Knowing someone
and she's been there,
who
so,
may
yeah.
or may not have died there would make it so much more traumatic than like you or I going there today and having this nebulous, well, maybe I have an ancestor who may or may not have kicked it here. You know, it's different.
Well, and in her mind, it's Jamie who died there.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Who died at Culloden.
She struggles to sustain her charade, or charade, but thinks that three more candy bars and a mystery novel would get her through the day. This also made me think of Diana, who likes mysteries as well, and a certain type of chocolate bar. Teresa W. writes, "At this point, I am suspecting that Claire has ulterior motives. It seems she has picked out Roger for Brianna, but I don't know why. What is Claire planning?" Connie shares, "For language buffs who like to know the origins of words, I give you canny, uncanny, and ken." Now, Connie shared a lot of information on these three words and their meaning and origin. She says, "I find the history of these words, especially Ken, interesting in relation to what we learn about the history of Scotland and the Highlands in Diana's books, most especially the Norse Viking influence on the culture that still exists today." Ellen shares, "So playing the avoidance game with each other, Bree asks her mother a question I don't think she would have asked earlier about her parents' relationship. The bomb of Claire now knowing about Roger's family. Claire playing sick so she wouldn't have to go with Bree and Roger to Culloden. Avoidance, working around people to get to know more. Bree understanding a bit more about her parents' relationship. Claire learning about Bree's attraction to Roger. He played a big part in this chapter without even being in it.
I love that this is something they're setting up as being Claire's thing to do.
Absolutely.
That she keeps food in the drawer next to her bed. Like, that's something that she does on a daily. Like, she's like, I'm just going to keep snacks because you never know what's going to happen. And I always want to have something because you never know when you're going to need a snack. And that is something that will come up again and again and again in this series. Which is something that I love that she started here. But I think it's strange that it's always, at least in this portion of the story, that it's all candy. I can't imagine sustaining myself on just candy. Is that even a word, sustaining? No, that's not a word.
Subsisting on or sustaining.
Thank you!
Subsisting.
Subsisting on candy. Because, I mean, I don't even like candy that much, but I can't imagine, because I'm a savory kind of girl. So I can't imagine being okay a whole day on candy bars.
I can.
Okay. I can't. I would rather have like a box of saltines and call it a day.
You're like my mother. She just licks saltines all day long.
Just give me a salt lick. I'll be okay. I'm like a deer, actually. Just put a salt lick on a tree and I'll be okay for a few hours.
I like the section where she talks about the scarf. About Brianna's scarf. How she's picked this beautiful scarf that was very precious to her. That Frank had brought her from Paris. You know, which was telling to Claire, and that she picked that to wear on her day alone with Roger, but also how beautiful it was, and the, again, a little bit more of an idea of the relationship between Frank and Brianna, how he called her little beauty, and just the way she painted that picture.
But then the whole joke of it, where she's like, it's just like your eyes, orange. I love the joke between the two of them. Her hair is obviously orange, but when he would, you know, talk about the scarf being the color of her eyes and then saying that her eyes were perhaps orange. It was cute.
Yeah.
I love all of the allusions to the relationship between Frank and Brianna, because they had that great relationship between them that was loving and teasing and all of the things you really want to see from a parental relationship, even given the fact that we all know that he is not her actual biological father. And I love that he was able to reach that point with her, even though he thought he was not capable of loving another man's child. Mm-hmm. Which I think was so interesting that Diana threw that in book one, not knowing that she'd ever get a chance to write a book two.
That's true.
And was like, I'm going to stick to this because it was awesome and I'm glad I mentioned it. Mm-hmm. I think it's good. All right, I'm going to call it. That's chapter three, y'all. Mothers and daughters.
So that wraps up chapter three of Dragonfly and Amber for our read-along. Join us back next week. I'm sure we'll have something interesting going on.
Episode 63 is all 63. I know. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com. I dreamt it last night that my young